Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Mickey Farrell, 30 years of combination experience, third generation firefighter, a lieutenant with the FDNY on a truck company in East Harlem, and creator of Top Floor Tactics Podcast. Mickey's indoctrination into the fire service was during a time America as a whole were more united than ever. When you hear Mickey speak, there's no denying the love he has for the profession. Firemen can sense BS a mile away. When one finds their true calling, they discover a sense of purpose and direction in life, often associated with a deep passion or talent they feel drawn to. It's a vocation that provides meaning and fulfills their inner sense of identity. This realization can be a profound and transformative experience. And Mickey Farrell exemplifies just that. With that, I present Mickey Farrell.
What's up, guys? My name is Mickey Farrell, and I fell in love with the fire service because I'm a third-generation firefighter. My grandfather showed my father the way, and my father showed me the way to the greatest job on earth.
Okay. I did not know that about you, third generation. So it was inevitable, in a sense, that you were going to follow suit.
That's all I ever really knew. It's all I ever really cared about. Of course, as a kid, you dream about everything from even being a garbage man sometimes. You see, hanging on the back of the garbage truck, you ask a young kid, that seemed like fun. But to me, it was always the fire truck, the fireman running on the back step. I grew up in the volunteer firehouse with my father, and then my grandfather being a career firefighter, being a part of that community and that brotherhood. It's really all I knew. So, and on top of that, all my grandfather and father's friends that were firefighters. So that's all I really understood was the fire service and the job and the brotherhood.
Okay. With that being said, was the FDNY always on the radar, or did you kind of just put your name in a huge pool?
That was it, man. So I grew up in a small town, a little under an hour outside of New York City. And so there's a huge, huge New York City influence on the entire tri-state area of firefighting. So that was the New York Yankees for all of us. And, that's all I ever wanted, all I ever saw. So I put all my eggs in one basket, and I moved to New York City at a young age, right out of high school. And I started my journey that way. I didn't want to play any games. I just wanted to put everything into that. So that was the absolute target for my future.
Okay. When you say by yourself, like literally by yourself, you just moved out, got an apartment or wherever you stayed at, and you knew the goal.
Yeah, that was it. So when I think I was 19 years old, I knew that's ultimately what I wanted to do. So bartending, being in a band, traveling, working in the family business, there was always options to make money, not in such a formal way. So that said, I was able to move to Queens at a young age, and I moved in with a roommate. And then from Queens, I moved to the Bronx, and from the Bronx, I moved to Manhattan and spent many years in Manhattan. But that was kind of the journey throughout that. But yeah, I just picked up and moved at a young age. I mean, we were close enough where I was always going back and forth, but I mean, I jumped right into it head first.
Okay. And how long or how many tries did it take for you to get officially on?
I don't know. I don't know when I actually took the test. I think I took the written in 98 or 99. And then I was called in 2001. I got the call previous to September 11th, but then that happened in the transition of going on the job. So that delayed me a month. And then I've been on since 01.
Okay. So needless to say, when you started, you had a little bit of fire experience, not FDNY experience, but you had some fire experience under your belt.
Yeah, I was a volunteer fireman, and I kind of bounced around from different departments, just kind of chasing work, to be honest. And that was probably about 6-7 years until it actually came to fruition with the job. If anything, I don't know if it necessarily helped me. It may have hurt me in many ways, those early years, because you kind of develop bad habits, if that makes sense. I wouldn't change a thing, but there's something to be said about coming into the job with knowing absolutely nothing and have never been going to a fire or been to a fire in your entire life, because the FDNY has a way of molding you to a certain way or to a certain standard of a firefighter. And for a lot of guys that come from other places, there is a bit of confusion because that standard is very different.
Understood. Okay. So with that being said,
Upon getting in, going through your academy, rookie school, what was that like for you?
It was emotional. We had a DI, this guy Joe Higgins from 111 Truck, and the guy, legendary firefighter, and he was our rally guy every morning. So he would go to the pile every morning, search for his brother, come back to the academy and rally us and tell us about who they found that morning, what the day's plans were. And it was very, very motivational, but very emotional and very moving in the sense where we saw a different side of the job during that academy than I think that any other firefighter ever experienced, because there was a before and an after we were enduring. And with that, it's the academy took a different spin. It was very emotional in many ways, not just in the physical and emotional demand of becoming a New York City fireman, but the emotional understanding that we are replacing these guys. We are the replacements, more or less. And that's a lot of weight to carry at a very young age, and it on such a grand scheme, or on like a grand level of understanding that we're not trying to replace anyone, but we're going to rebuild this great, great department that was built by so many amazing individuals before us. So there was a level of emotion that came with that.
Okay. I can't even imagine that time, but with everything that was going on, did they keep your academy like the same length of time? I'm imagining the setup was probably different.
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. No. So the academy is anywhere from 18 to 23 weeks since then. It fluctuates back and forth. Every class seems like they add stuff or stuff, take stuff away, trial and error. But for us, I think we were only there for 7 weeks, maybe. And it was a crash course. It was boom, boom, boom. These are the essentials. Then you get out to the field and get the work. And we got some real learning experience very hands-on and very quickly, because that was what we had to do. They needed the men in the field. They needed those numbers to go up in the field. And so they started pumping classes out very quickly after that. We were the first class that was that cut at that short time, but we moved forward very quickly with that. And yeah, so that's a great question. And it's a question I get asked often, but it's also a question that it needs to be thought about as far as what we're teaching young firefighters in the academy and how long some of these academies are. Is it really mandatory, all the stuff that we're actually doing, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. So upon completion, where was your first assignment?
So I came out of the academy and I went to Hell's Kitchen in a single engine company in the west side of Manhattan. It's not what I wanted. It's not where I dreamed of going. And, you know, I always say good people gravitate to great places. And I did end up where I was supposed to be, but there's a silver lining behind it. It's not that I didn't want to work in that company. I just didn't understand that area of New York City. You know, we were so romanticized about this job, like long coats, three-quarter boots, leather helmets. Like that's what I grew up watching and admiring. And it was always the Bronx and Harlem for me, because that's where the fires were. And that's where Mike Dick was as well, a famous photographer during that time of growing up in the 80s. That documented these amazing firemen and these amazing fires. So that's really, really what I wanted. I wanted that so badly. And then when the assignments come out and I'm in a single engine in Manhattan, I wasn't thrilled to say the least. But the silver lining was when I get there, these men that I learned from, these senior guys, it was a very senior house, which was odd for that area during that time, but a very, very senior house. Those guys showed me what this job was about, not only through like the hands-on going to fires, but the brotherhood, the culture, loyalty, what it means to laugh and cry with one another. Because they lost five guys, including the captain. And walking through those doors was it was a big learning experience and learning curve. Some of those guys looked at me as in, what is this guy doing here? Some had tears in their eyes, said, thank you for coming. We never thought anyone else ever walked through these doors. So it was an emotional roller coaster going to that company, but I can't tell you what that did for me and grounded me to truly, truly understand a side of the job that, you know, if I did go to the Bronx right out of the academy, I probably wouldn't have understood a certain level of the job that I gained from going to that firehouse.
Understood. And even though it wasn't the assignment you wanted, did you still kind of go out and find those firefighters that were essentially into the job to emulate yourself
Yeah,
after?
you know, that's the funny thing is that company, those guys were into the job, but they were into the job in a different way. They went to fires, and you know, a single engine has a different feel, a different dynamic. And I wanted to be in an engine out of the academy. I didn't want to go to a truck right away. I wanted to learn what it meant to be an engine company firefighter, especially in New York City. Those guys were into the job, but like I said, in a different way. But in the mix of all the young firefighters, you do kind of gravitate to certain people and stick together. And those guys, some guys stay, some guys moved on. But, you know, as big as that job really is, the core guys stick together, the ones that are into the job and that love the job dearly. And then you have the guys that are the athletes, and they kind of overlap, and those guys kind of stick together. But the beauty of it is that it all comes down to teamwork and loyalty. And so guys fluctuate in those different kinds of groups of subcultures within the job, because the job is so big. There's different subcultures of the society within the job. But the good guys will always gravitate together. And those are the guys you kind of find yourself hanging out with at the events, or meeting up after a funeral or after Medal Day or whatnot, and just talking shop, talking fires, and talking the future of your progression to the job together.
And how long did you stay there before going to the next assignment?
I think I was there maybe 2.5 years, 3 years, and then I went up to the Bronx.
I'm assuming where you wanted to be at.
Yeah, so the job is about hooks, believe it or not. And they'll tell you it's not. Getting on the job, there's no hooks getting on the job. But once you get on, it's all about who you know and who you don't know. Like I said, I'm a third generation firefighter, but I'm the first New York City fireman. So you kind of have to make your own ways when that's the case. And that's pretty much what I did. There's an idea, or there's an understanding of not politicking, but networking. And you truly had to network your way into position of where you wanted to be, because the job is so large. You had to go to all the events. You had to talk to people. You had to show up and knock on those firehouses' doors with the cakes multiple times to talk to the captain, to let the guys know, hey, guys, I really want to be here. And that's kind of the path that it took was, and it took some time to get there. I mean, the day I came off probation, I tried going, and it took a few years to finally to come through. But it is where I wanted to end up, and it was an incredible firehouse, and that's really where I became a true fireman.
Okay. And what company was that, if you don't mind elaborating?
That was 43 engine, and then I went over to 59 truck very shortly after that. So I did a majority of my career in 43 and 59 in the West Bronx.
Okay. how long did you wait before you decided to start moving up the ranks, and why?
So, like I say, it's such a tremendous firehouse to work in. A lot of guys were studying, and it's kind of, they used to call it a chief's house, where like if your son's chief, you would go there, and then very quickly you get promoted and move on. It's just the way the house always rolled. There's a big turnover there because guys are into the job and guys are good at the job. But there's also a lot of senior guys that stick around. It kind of has best of both worlds. But I was very comfortable. I didn't necessarily want to promote. I didn't see myself in that leadership role. I just love the back step. I love carrying the irons. I love forcing doors. I love pulling ceilings. Like, I like getting dirty. Like, I'm a fireman's fireman when it comes to the fire. I wasn't the guy that wanted to stand there with the flashlight. And that's kind of how our job role is. When you are the officer, you are the supervisor at a fire. You're the supervisor on the inside of the fire, but you're not the one forcing the doors or stretching the lines. You're just kind of supervising that into position. So I'd studied with those guys, and these guys came out top of the list, man. I'm talking some of the smartest guys on the job, and they're still progressively moving forward throughout the ranks. But I just kind of being in that company, as in the company of the men, they were studying, and I was studying too. I wasn't crushing it like these guys. These guys were devoting like 6 hours a day for years. Like, I'd study maybe 3 hours a day for 2 years. Like, so I was invested, but if I didn't get it, I didn't get it, and I was okay. And I ended up getting it late in my career. I got promoted with over 20 years on the job. So that took a whole different turn and a different outlook to the fire service, which gave me a rebirth. So I'm so grateful things worked out the way they did. And I'm so grateful I had a full career over 20 years as a firefighter before I took on the role as an officer.
Wow, that's in my eyes, that's awesome. But for some, it's like 20 years, that's way too long. But with the 20 years, I'm sure the amount of experience that you got under your belt and then moved up, what's your take on? And I understand the FDNY is a different animal. There's only one FDNY, but as far as what's your advice for telling for firefighters who want to wait a little bit before promoting?
So I think it comes down to the department you work for. And, you know, this is a good question, and a good question I get asked often when I'm traveling or whatnot. Guy will come up to me and say, hey, listen, I'm on the promotional list. I'm going to get called. I don't think I'm ready for it. I might turn it down. If it's not you, then who is it, right? So that's the question we have to talk about. I'm fortunate enough where I was able to stay 20 years on the back step. The other departments, there's not an option. It's like you have to get promoted, or nobody's there to promote. Or if you don't get promoted, then the next asshole is going to get promoted. The guy that you don't want telling you what to do. So I say that if you love the job and you're into this job and you respect it, study and move up. And you know, don't be studying for a lieutenant or captain when you're still on probation. I've seen that too, and I don't think that's a good way. There's a series of mistakes you have to make to become good at this job, and I think you have to make them in real time, and that comes from making mistakes on the back step and going to fires. That's important, but I also think it's important that for the smaller departments that you have to move up to make change and to make improvements. It's not going to happen on the back step. Change comes from within, but if you're not able to promote and then make that change, then the wrong guys will promote because they're in it for the wrong reasons. So if you love the job, I think it's a good move to promote early enough.
That's definitely facts. That's something I've had to come to terms with. Like, I wanted to stay in the back, but at some point, when you look at the big picture, you'll either get frustrated or see, like, this individual got promoted, and you hear or you know personally that they're doing it for the wrong reason. And sometimes it's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah, and it's very real when you go to a fire and then you see these guys that are in a leadership role making really bad decisions that are influencing and inflecting what you're doing on the fire ground, and that's dangerous.
Yeah, no, for sure. Okay. So how at what point did you realize, or have you always wanted to do ladder work over engine? You did say that you wanted to be to get on the engine to get that experience, but have you always loved the ladder side?
So my grandfather, he was a diehard truckie, you know, and he was very, very steeped in tradition of the truck company. My dad being a volunteer fireman, most volunteer fire departments are engine based. So that's kind of what I knew was the engine and understanding that like stretching a good line with that feeling is almost like hitting the perfect golf drive or hitting the perfect home run. That feeling when you stretch something perfectly, there's so much pride in that, which doesn't get talked about often, is the pride of the stretch. But I think it's so important to go to an engine first and learn that side of the job intimately. Know how long it takes to make that stretch. Because if you're on the top floor searching ahead of the line, that line that's in the process of being stretched, there's an internal clock that's ticking. And that internal clock will let you know if something's gonna go wrong or not, because you know, okay, that line should be right about now. You should hear it on the radio start water. And when you're searching three, four, six rooms deep, and you don't hear that transmission, you know something's wrong because you've been in that situation before making that stretch. Or when you're under stress doing a search and you hear burst length, or you hear frozen hydrant, or you hear burst length, those are things that if you didn't spend time in the truck, excuse me, if you didn't spend time in the engine prior to going to a truck, I think that you exclude them through your mind when you're working under stress, right? So those are key points that when you spend time in the engine, when you hear those transmissions, it's like a very urgent transmission to pay attention to. And if you didn't live it, then you don't necessarily know it. So I'm very happy I spent time in the engine. I think it's important to spend time in the engine before making that move because we have to know all parts of the game. And I truly believe the engine company is the infantry of the fire service. And when you love it and learn it, you can be that much better and that much more calculated in the truck company.
For sure. For sure. I love it. Okay. Your opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
So this is the word, obviously, that gets thrown around quite often in the fire service. And, you know, for many, the word aggressive means speed, right? Aggression, toughness, type A personality, hoorah. And there's something to that, but there's more to it. And I think for me, aggressiveness is tempo and understanding that every fire has a different tempo, a different cadence, and then a different rhythm. And when you could find yourself operating within that ultimate rhythm of a fire, that allows you to work very good at this job. It also comes from a series of mistakes, right? So this is why it's so important that to be a quote unquote aggressive firefighter, you have to have humility. And I think the humility is the progression of today's fire service, that if you allow yourself to make the mistakes, own the mistakes, correct the mistakes, and then build off them, eventually, like anything in life, you build confidence, and with confidence comes the word aggressive. But my good friend Bob Presler, we were out to dinner one night, And I tell the story often because it's funny, because he asked me the same question just randomly. We're just having dinner, having a drink, and he says, "What's the word aggressive mean to you?" And I had this, I thought I knocked it out of the park. I went down this whole mistake thing. Oh, humility, mistakes, everything I just said. And I think there was something to that. And he says, "Oh, that's good. That's good. I like that." And then he just says, "But isn't it just doing your job and being good at it?" So that's aggressive firefighting to me. It's just being good at your job, understanding where you fit in. That's professionalism. And with professionalism comes aggression. So these are all the things that we get thrown around with it, with this, the goon squad and the hoorah and all these things that it fire guys up, which is good. We need that. We need that to be proactive. We have to understand that aggression comes from slowing down, understanding tempo, owning your mistakes, having humility, and then progressively moving forward.
Freaking awesome. Well said. All right. So 20 years backstep, and then you finally decide to promote. When you decided to go that route, did you feel internally like you were ready?
Absolutely not. You think you're ready until you're not. And, doing so long on the back step, and with us, we have the inside team, and we kind of shadow the officer with that inside team. So I had a lot of experience learning from some of the greatest officers in the world. And I truly believe that. And then you also have the opportunity to work with some other officers that kind of show you some bad sides of leadership. So I had that going for me, that I had a tremendous amount of experience observing other officers. So I thought I was going to be a lot better than I was right off the bat. It's a big, big change when you go in the front seat and you put that blue shirt on, and now you have to talk to the chief on the radio. Everything you think you knew, you don't. And that was a challenge. But again, with everything else, by owning it, it allows you to get better. Owning those mistakes, you get better. It's just hard pill to swallow when you realize, like, you have 20 plus years and then you're relearning a new position all over again. Just when you think you have the job figured out, right? It's always a curveball in the fire service. But even on a leadership standpoint, it's a challenge from talking on the radio to navigating the office and the paperwork to crawling down a hallway, and not necessarily the fear of crawling down the hallway, but understanding that this job is much bigger than you as an individual now. You are responsible for so many others. And that's something that I understood, but you don't truly understand it until you live it.
Were you able to get it for a shot?
No, absolutely not. To the point where, like, when we get promoted, we bounce around different firehouses until you find a home. I was very, very fortunate that I didn't have to do that very long, maybe 2 weeks. I ended up in a really, really, really great engine company. Some of the best firefighters I've ever worked for and or worked with. We went through some really good fires during that time. And again, just like starting out in the engine as a firefighter, starting out in the engine as an officer was good for me, but I found myself somewhat out of position at fires because I was still thinking with the mine truck set. Like a truck kind of dances their way into position. We operate remotely from the line. We operate as individuals, where the engine company is company integrity. It's truly a team. And that's so important to remember as a leader and as an officer in the engine company. You're leading your men to battle. You're leading your men into war. And I'm going to take you places you've never been, but I'm going to bring you back. That's something you have to remember as an engine officer, is that you are staying with your company. And the truck officer, you're kind of operating remotely. So I found myself out of position very early at fires, operating as I would in a truck. So that was a challenge for me, right off the bat. The first couple of fires, I realized this is a lot harder than I thought. Yes, start waters of transmission. Yes, waters on the fire is a transmission. But under a little bit of stress, you forget the basics. And those are some of the basics that a good chief will prompt the young officer to say, Battalion one to Engine one, how you making out? How's status of the water? Oh shit, I got to say water's on the fire. Chief, water's on the fire. Like these little things like that, that you think you add a little bit of stress, and you realize very quickly that, wow, I'm learning as I go.
How long did you stay a lieutenant on the ladder on the engine before getting to the ladder side?
So, like I said, we bounce around. I still work in the engine here and there, but I was in that company for a little over a year and a half before I crossed the floor of the truck.
Okay. All right. So this is one thing I know I have difficulty whenever I go to trainings and we do scenarios and we rotate positions where like I'm the firefighter and then the next time I'm the officer, quote unquote. I find it very difficult to, because as a firefighter, we want to go, we want to do things, but when you're in the role of an officer, it's you have to stand back and guide, and I have huge difficulty with that. Like I feel like I'm not doing anything.
Yes, and that's a very real feeling, especially in our job, because the men do all the work, and that's the key to it, is that if you allow your people to work, things will get done. But a good officer will trust their men, from the chief down to the lieutenant, and let your men work. When you let your men work, the job gets done. And why micromanaging and overstepping as a quote unquote leadership role, I think that we're setting up our young failures, we're setting up our young firefighters for not only failure, but for being discouraged from doing the job, being discouraged from making decisions under stress. We have to allow them to do that, to make their own mistakes. Again, humility is the forward progression. And when we allow our firefighters to make mistakes, I can't tell you how many times I'm standing there observing a young firefighter force the door and doing everything wrong. Now, I could say, hey, do this, do that, do this, do that, as if I'm teaching them. But we all know we learn by making mistakes. Just like a kid learning to walk, they're going to fall 1,000 times. So if it's not a dire situation, people trapped, fire blowing out the windows, and it comes down to the forcing the door, I will allow my men to make those mistakes in real time and then learning. That's why I think it's also so important to own the moment, is that a lot of people are so quick to give up their opportunities because they think they've had so many. But we all want to go to fires, right? And unfortunately, as much as they say fire duty is up, it's hard to believe it because we all want more. We want more. We want more. So I'm quick to tell guys, listen, if you're assigned a certain position for the tour, your job is to force the door. Don't give the probie the shot. It's your shot to make the mistake. Because I don't think we all have that enough experience to be giving off and pawning off situations in the moment, especially under a little bit of stress. So unless you're a guy with 20 plus years and it's something so routine and so mundane that you can pass it on for that young firefighter to make the mistake, I think it's important that every position in every moment, there's a role to be played. And even though you're not making that move in the moment to have forward progression of the fire, you're still observing the senior firefighter make the moves and learning from watching. So I think it's important to own your moment and to allow them to the work.
Okay. I've had a couple other FDNY youth firefighters and officers on. So is it really a thing where like when you decide to promote to like lieutenant and captain and you're still on the apparatus, like you pretty much, I don't want to say you do nothing, but like there's no such thing as you helping with the stretch. There is no such thing as you helping with, I don't know, I don't want to say maybe not helping with the grab, but like in case of the forcing of the door, you can't just go, all right, man, it's okay, I got it. And you actually grab the tool and do it. Or like I heard like that's like a no-no pretty much.
So a good way to look at it is that there's no room for you to help with the tasks. You have a different job. The job is making sure that my brothers and sisters are safe when they're making those tasks, as far as making the stretch, forcing the door, now cutting the roof. I'm not observing that, but I'm expecting my men to do that the right way through our training and through their own experiences. However, the mission is very different now as an officer. So once we cross that threshold into the fire department, the line is stretched, we call for water, we're on air, we're ready to go. Now we're going in. I'm crawling ahead of the line in the truck company searching for the fire. Now we're all doing the same thing. We're all doing the same in the truck. I'm searching for the fire. I'm taking windows. I'm becoming a firefighter. That's the beauty of the truck company, is that when you are the officer, you still get to play fireman per se. You come across a body, you make the grab. Right? You take come across window, you take the window. The problem is that during all this, there's an internal clock that we have to remember, that when things have to be getting done, and you have to be, people say you can't multitask. I think that's impossible, because when you're an officer in a truck company, you are multitasking. You're searching for the fire, you're taking windows, and you're supervising your members on the roof, coming in the window, and crossing, crawling above and beyond the fire. These are all things that, yes, we're not forcing the door physically, but once we cross that threshold, it's all bets are off. We're all playing the same game.
Okay. I understood. And the engine, if you're an engine boss, you unfortunately do not have that luxury.
No, so with the engine boss, it truly is, it's the greatest seat in the house. I mean, you're right there with the nozzle, man. We all know the nozzle is the best position, right? But with the engine officer, you're really just saying, all right, start water, right? Now we find the water. Now, I say all you're really doing, and I don't mean to downplay or dismiss that, but the most important transmission at any fire, in any fire ever, is water on the fire. And that comes solely from the engine officer. So when I'm in the engine, my goal is to make sure we stretch right, right? Now, I'm not doing the stretch. I'm observing, and I'm trusting my guys to make this happen. In a bigger building, I will determine what wing we're going to. I could come in and say, stretch to the A wing, the B wing, the C wing, depending on where that is. So I will determine what the tax areas we're using in a fireproof. These are all things as the engine officer, right? Calling for water, very important. But I've learned that my number one priority is making sure my company is ready to go to war. So this is again where humility comes into it. I have three things I ask my guys, especially in the engine. Are you ready? They say yes. And I'll say, are you sure? And if they say, yeah, I'm sure, boss. Okay, let's go. That's my last thing I say to them. Then we cross the threshold and we go to war. There's no turning back at this point. If you say, boss, I got to go, well, you better find a new place to work because you told me you were good 2 seconds ago, obviously, unless something drastic happens. Now, so that's so important that you have humility as a young firefighter to say, no, boss, I'm not good. My chin strap's spun around. My hood's up over my hood, my mask. Well, I'll take 2 seconds and I'll fix it for you. And then we'll go to war. But that's such an important factor of the engine company officer is making sure you guys are ready to go to war because we all know that most things go wrong, drastically wrong, when we don't have water on the fire quickly and efficiently. So if we're not ready to do our job, that's when the dominoes begin to fall the wrong way. So as the engine officer, I find it so important to make sure your guys are safely ready to go to work.
Okay. Personal question for you. Any aspirations to go higher than lieutenant?
Now, I get this often, especially because guys are studying now. And I'm really, really, really happy where I am. And I don't see myself leaving this place for any time in the near future. So is it a smart move to study for longevity of my career and my health and my job? Probably yes. But I tell you, man, the place I work right now, these guys, they're just tremendous. And there's a captain there that was there for like 20 years, famous, legendary captain. And he said this firehouse ruined his career because he could have went up the ranks to probably a staff chief level. And he stayed the captain for over 20 years because he said, this place ruined my career because he was just so happy there. And it's such a great place to work. It has everything, every type of response in the area. But it really comes down to the guys and how squared away they are. It makes it really, really, really to be an officer there. It's so easy because they do everything the right way and they take care of you.
Okay. So if you don't want to move up to for captain, and I don't know how the FDNY works when it comes to that internally, so I'm asking you, would do you ever face the possibility of getting booted because this person got promoted to captain, or are you safe at the company you're in because you're still an officer, you just don't carry the captain title?
Yeah, so we have a captain and three officers in every company. That's how it works for us. So once you
Gotcha.
get that spot, you're locked into that spot. That's your company.
Okay.
Being a company commander is the captain, right? And that's your company. There's something to that, right? And I didn't realize it into becoming a lieutenant that when you're the company commander, you make decisions from the way things go on the rig. Now, most times the guys make those decisions, but ultimately it has to go through over the captain's desk and say, "Hey, Cap, we're thinking about this. What do you think?" And most times, the senior guy has the final say. If it's a good idea, bad idea, the captain might say, "Listen, bro, I don't think it's a great idea." But that doesn't happen too often. But and then with that, the lieutenants work under the captain, and that's your company for the day, if that makes sense. The captain, that's your company every single day of the year. Even if you're not at work, that's your company. Now it's all our company. They ultimately have the responsibility, even when they're not there. Lieutenants, we're responsible when we are there.
Okay, understood. All right. Now, with you being who you are, and I'm not trying to boast you up, or some people say like kiss your ass or anything, but the fact that of who you are and what you're promoting when it comes to the job, have you ever faced a situation where the haters are like, well, you're just a lieutenant, you're not a captain, and things like that? Like, do you ever find that individuals with rank are trying to show you that they have bugles in a sense?
Are you speaking of like the social media aspect? as far as that, like.
That or just, I mean, because I'm sure you've heard of the saying, you're never a prophet in your own land. So I'm sure
Yes.
you have some individuals within your own organization that are like, who is this guy? Like, who, why does he think he can do what he's doing?
Yes. It's quite the opposite, to be honest with you. The farther up in rank you go, I've been more embraced. And if you go down the firefighter rank, that's where that kind of comes in. We're like, who does this guy think he is? And if you follow the content, the only thing I'm doing is protecting the legacy of the FDNY, protecting the legacy of the fire service, molding and shaping young firefighters through humility. And when I think if the haters, which believe it or not, like I don't get like the crazy haters like you would think. Like, and I think that because it speaks volumes with the character of my opinion of my job, it's really hard to put yourself out there in anything you do. And this is probably the hardest thing that I've ever done in my life. And I'm still every morning you wake up and I'm like, am I doing the right thing here? Because it's really hard to put yourself out there in front of your peers. And for me, putting myself out there in something that I love so dearly, with the chances of it turning on me and becoming a negative impact on what I love so much, I struggle with that. And it was a huge struggle. But when I have guys that you would never ever imagine come up to me and say, hey brother, I love what you're doing, keep doing it, you're making a difference with the young firefighters, and that kind of justifies it all for me there. So the few haters I've had here and there, it's easier said than done to let it roll off your back. But I know that the only thing that I'm in this for is the future and the legacy of, I feel, the greatest department in the world and the greatest job in the world as the fire service. And I just want to protect it.
Okay, love it. Love it. All right. What's your take on outside training?
I think it's important, but I don't think it's mandatory. If guys want to go and find other outlets of training, I think it's a really great thing. Obviously, I travel all over the country and teach, so I think it's important we do get out and we do see other people with different views and concepts. But I think localizing our training is something we have to focus more on the fire service today, and we've lost that. I think that senior firefighters don't want to take on that role in smaller departments or bigger departments. It doesn't really matter. It's when you have those the problems, and I hear about a lot of the problems where you see a super young motivated guy, and then he's on a shift per se, right? And those guys aren't into the job, but maybe C shift is into the job, and he's trying to get to C shift because his boy's there, and he's, oh, we drill every tour, and he's like, man, I come to work and we don't do anything, and then you start to hate the fire service. So that's a dangerous and it's a sad thing we're dealing with in today's fire service. So yes, going outside and finding that outside training is important. But I challenge any senior firefighter listening to this that knows that, you know what, we kind of slacked off in the past couple of years. I got comfortable becoming a senior guy role. I'm not drilling with the guys. I think it's important that we double down on localized training, because training is regional. Firefighting is a regional game. You go to the Pacific Northwest, very different than Florida, and you go to Maine, to New Mexico, very different firefighting strategy and tactics. Yeah, the core value of the fire service is the same, but how we do the job is very different. And I think it's important that if we localize it and we listen to those mentors and those senior guys, and we take value in that, we're only going to get better at this job on a localized level. And really, the localized level is all that really matters in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I'm very, very factual. Yes. Okay. Where did the love or the spark for you honing in on lithium ion batteries come in? Because that's it. Some would say that it's a hazmat topic, but what caused or what triggered you to deep dive into that?
I think mainly because nobody was talking about it, but we were going to them. And the more and more we started to go to them, I started to realize, like, okay, these are not routine fires, even though they are routine fires. So you're becoming routine fires. And I say the word routine is that there's a different element to the game when we introduce lithium ion batteries to it. And I wouldn't say it's a passion. My passion is like the job. And anything that influences the job per se on the fire ground, I think we have to dial in and double down on it and really, really see how is this going to change it? Is it going to move things? Will the tempo of the fires change? Which all these things it does. Nobody was talking about it. And I'm talking nobody internally within the FDNY. No one's talking about it. And I'm going back a few years ago. So after brainstorming with a couple of friends of mine, and they're like, "You're crazy, bro." And they would break my balls left and right over batteries. And next thing you know, here we are in the new war years of the FDNY with lithium ion batteries. And there's been progression made. There's slow progress being made internally. But I think there's so much within this that we're not necessarily changing the tactics of firefighting. We're just looking at the jobs with a little bit more of detail and understanding how dangerous these fires can be. It's not necessarily that the batteries are starting the fires, which they're starting a lot of fires in the cities and outside the cities as well, but it's how those batteries can be thermally loaded and now possibly crawling into a fire building that's a ticking time bomb that fires could go off or bombs could go off anywhere in the fire building. That's something we have to talk about that no one's really talking about. And that's pretty much what my class is based on, is understanding a modern fire in a tactical sense, meaning that it's a modern fire, but we still have to keep our tactics and our understanding of the game dialed into reality. We've lost too many things in this fire service and in the job when we don't look at things through reality. You can even throw in the way we're packaging members and finding victims in fires and removing them. How we look about and talk about search. We're trying to always to reinvent the wheel, where if we just stick to the basics, even with a little bit of a change in the game, like a lithium ion battery, if we stick to the basics and we not minimize, but we maximize on the basics, we'll find success. But we have to be able to understand it. So I know it was a long drawn out answer to your question, but I think that the battery issue, and it's a battery top, is not a New York City problem. As much as it was a localized problem for years, I'm starting to see it grow all the time now, because the few classes that I've done throughout the country, it was almost like preparing them. This might happen. And I would say 80% of those departments that I went to, I've received an email from a chief or another firefighter saying, "Hey, we had one. Can you believe that?" And I say, "Yeah, I can believe that, because it's very real."
Right. Yeah, I mean they're in freaking everything now. And so personally, how many of those lithium ion battery fires did you go to with the FDNY?
I don't know. Like,
I mean, it doesn't
give
have to
me,
be exact.
I don't know an exact number, but let's say that pretty much every fire we go to today, if it did start the fire, it has some kind of role play being affected within the fire, whether it be a hoverboard, an e-bike, a scooter, something in that fire department that could be possibly thermally loaded. And then we go through the steps of removing that. So every fire we go to essentially is lithium ion battery incident. It's just a matter of how we look at it.
Okay. All right. Another personal question. Earlier, you mentioned, you know, how you have so much passion and love for the job. Do you believe, and it's only your opinion, do you believe that, can you have a firefighter who is just there? They're good, but like they can always be better. Like, so in a sense, do you believe if you're going to become a firefighter, you have to love the job or be into the job per se?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's something I do think about, because working for the city of New York is that a lot of guys are just city guys, and they come on the job, no influence with the fire service outside the FDNY, and they're tremendous firemen. They know their job very, very, very well. Are they going to conferences on the weekends? Most of them, no. I would say 90% of my job are doing nothing outside the job. So it's a fine line. And I think that if we just identify that the guys that when they do come to work and they're super into it, if they're all into it when they're there, I don't care what they do when they're there. If they're not thinking about the fire ground when they're not there, then more power to them. I wish I could turn it off at many times, you know, but I'm not sure if that answers your question or not. But I think that if we invest in our guys when we're at work, they will produce for you at all times. That comes from creating a culture of not aggressiveness, right? The culture of aggressiveness, we always hear that. It becomes through a culture of love. And I think that as a leader, as a senior guy, if you learn to love the guys you work with and you know them on a personal level and intimate level, when you go to fires, it transcends so much farther than what it could do if we kept that type A aggressive hoorah attitude where no one's taking care of each other, right? So I think that the guys that aren't so into the job per se, if you show them a little love, they will always produce at a fire. And that's really what it comes down to.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay. And with that, with you being a company officer, what does leadership look like to you? Like, what is leadership supposed to be? Because I know we've all know individuals who go for the officer's position that only are there for the title, for the pay raise, for the quote unquote less work. But what kind of leader did you want to become when you got that position?
They sell a lot of leadership books, right? And I bought a couple of them when I first got promoted. I thumbed through them. Let's do some podcasts on leadership. There's always a class at a conference about leadership. I think that what no one's talking about is that leadership isn't really something you can read in a book. I think it comes from love and loyalty. It comes from letting your people work. It comes from humility. And I think that's the biggest key component to leadership is that when you have humility and you lead by example, every mistake I make after the fire, I pull the guys and say, wow, I did this wrong. I should have done that. And I'm honest with it and I'm very sincere about it. And very quickly, that opens the floodgates to mistakes. Now we're bouncing around mistakes of who could have done what better. And I think that by sharing these mistakes, that is a sign of a true leader is that, listen, man, I'm as human as they come. I might be your boss and we might go to hell and back. But we're all making mistakes every fire we go to. And when you exemplify that and you pass that on to young firefighters, they're willing to trust you even more so because they say, you know what? He makes mistakes too, but we trust him and we'll go wherever he takes us. I found success in that. It's a fine line between becoming friends with the guys and then becoming their boss. And as in the fire service, we know we live together, we eat together, we sleep together. It's a hard line to keep drawn in the sand. I think it's important, but don't think it's a line that can't fluctuate from time to time. I think by being friends with the guys is a good leader as well. I'm not saying that, I'm going to barbecues at their houses every weekends, but there's a sense of love and compassion for one another that I think that a good leader has. And I think that the ones that follow him kind of fall in line with that love. And then it's almost like I can't put it into words what that feeling is, but the ones that lead like that, they know what I'm speaking of. And is it right or wrong? I don't know. And I struggle with it. I do. Sometimes I'm like, I should have been more strict or stern on this thing. But what it all comes down to is love and loyalty. And that's what, for me, the bosses that showed love and loyalty to me when I was coming up to the job, they're the ones that I would do anything for.
Okay. I love it. I'm not sure if FDNY has this problem, but I know other agencies are. So, in your opinion, what do you see the fire service doing good on, and what can they improve on when it comes to recruitment and retention?
What we're doing wrong is, well, from a fire ground standpoint, we're not letting our people work from the highest level to the lowest level. And I think that's a problem. We have to let our people work. That's why we're seeing one room fires become multiple alarm fires because we don't let our people work. Now, that's not recruitment, but that's something that is an issue that I think down the road is going to come back and bite us. And that comes from chief officers being in positions through promotions very quickly without a lot of experience that are making these decisions that need to be made by people that have experienced and made the mistakes in real time. That's a problem. Now, retention and recruitment, I think we have to teach the job, or I'm sorry, teach the new recruits the love of the job. We've made the job very black and white when it's not. It's so colorful. It's every walk, every race, every gender now. And by embracing that through love and teaching that this is the greatest job in the world, and these are the reasons why people will buy in. You have to have your people buy in. And when the young firefighters are not buying in because they weren't told, hey, this is the tradition and cultures of the job, well, now they come to the firehouse and they're like, whoa, this is how we do things. I'm out on this. If we're very honest up front from day one, and say, these are the greatest things, not the vacation, not the weekends and holidays off if you want, or the weekends and holidays you have to work, which is the negative side. They never tell you about that, but they tell you about the vacation you get off, unlimited sick. Yeah, you got that too. But they're not telling you, listen, man, you got to work a lot of overtime too. And you're going to be here Christmas Eve and Christmas Day if you're the junior guy. And guess what? Greatest job in the world. You get to play softball on your day off and hang out with your friends, go to the bars, do boys' night outs. Guy comes in and says, "You know what? No one told me about all this. I don't want to do any of this. I thought I was coming to work for 24 hours and having 3 days off working my side job." So that's a problem with keeping guys, I think, because we're not upfront and honest from day one. We have to be complete open book and say, these are the great parts of the job, these are the bad parts of the job. But the great parts of the job, a lot of the rules aren't written. That tradition and legacy and culture. You can't teach culture. It's passed down from tradition to tradition. I understand that. And guys will try to sell you a class on culture left and right. It's impossible because culture is very localized from your own department. Culture comes from the standards set within your own people. But when you come, you have to be told from day one, just buy in to the job because really it's the greatest job in the world. And as we all know, your first couple of years are incredibly hard, especially if you went from working at Best Buy. Now you're crawling down a hallway. So it's a very, very drastic change. Just trust the process, fall in love with the process. I think we can keep so many more firemen if we're just open, honest from day one.
Excuse my language, but that was fucking spot on. Spot on. Yeah, spot on. And I understand, like, for me, I came into the fire service. I started as a volunteer, and it was you do what you're told, you listen, and then if you have questions, you can ask afterwards. And I get it. Some might not agree, like you have a lot of new firemen coming in now that are asking the why. And I 100% believe the why is important. There's a time and a place to ask the why, but I believe that's important. But it's sad to see traditions that are being lost because whether the organization fears, hey, this might be viewed as hazing, our HR department doesn't understand this, doesn't like this. But that is one thing I believe certain organizations are losing is that tradition. And if you don't have tradition, what do you have?
Great example, and I can see clear as day. A few years ago, they came down and said, you can't bucket anyone anymore, right? Because it's hazing. Now, bucketing in the fire services has been around forever. Is it hazing? Maybe a little bit. It's because we like you, but here's the deal. It's training. This is what we're not identifying. I can tell what guys came on the job before this memo came out and what guys came after. You know why? Because every single time they walk back into the firehouse after a run, they look up. They make sure their friends aren't going to bucket them. The ones that don't look up never got bucketed. So what does that teach you? It teaches you size up. Every time you go to a fire, you look up. It becomes force of habit. We're always looking up before we go into a building. And it comes from a training aspect of hazing, where they put it, they spun it to hazing. One guy didn't like get bucketed, didn't fall into the standards of what the job was, didn't understand the culture of the job because they were never taught this from day one. That guy might get bucketed one too many times, and there you go. He quits. He transfers. So, right there is a perfect example of how we're losing firefighters and how they're not understanding everything happens for a reason. And a lot of the things that are happening were coming from standards that came from the blood and tears of the brothers long before you. Everything matters. So, when you walk into a building and you get bucketed on your way in, you have to laugh it off because you know the next time you're going to walk in that firehouse, you're going to look up. And then you might get a fire that night. And before you walk in the building, force of habit, you're going to look up.
Yeah, love it. I love it. What does wellness and truly being there for one another in need mean to you? And I know that to me, that's kind of a dumb question to ask because the FDNY has lots of traditions. I had Jeff Kuhl on here a while back, and he mentioned where if you don't go to a FDNY funeral as a firefighter, like, they're gonna break your balls. So I am 100% sure that you guys have your own traditions in the brotherhood, and I'm sure the brotherhood's strong, but what does truly being there as firefighters mean to you?
It all comes down to loyalty. And loyalty comes through understanding that this job is bigger than you. That's another thing that we're not teaching young firemen is that you're an individual within a very, very large community, a very large family. And this job is entirely not about you. It's about the neighborhoods you swore to protect, as well as the brothers and sisters that you live and work among. So I think that if we can pass on to the next generation coming into this job, is that If you truly love it, embrace it, respect it, nourish it, and that's the family, the fire service in general, this job will take care of you and your family for generations and generations to come, tenfold. And the best part of it is though, you never, ever, ever have to say thank you. You just do the right thing for the next brother or sister that's in need. That's wellness. That's taking care of one another. And it all comes back to loyalty. Like you said, Jeff Kuhl said about the funeral. Yeah, you stand on that line and maybe you had to lose a day of side work, or maybe you have your kid with you. But when that car goes by and that limo goes by in that procession, no, they don't know you were there as an individual, but they know that, hey, you know what? Look at that patch. That guy drove 4 hours. That guy flew in from a different country to be here because the fire service, that community really is a family. And are we losing it? Maybe. But I don't think it's lost. We can definitely bring it back if we talk about it. And I think people are scared to talk about wellness. They're scared to talk about loyalty. There's so many things we're scared to talk about because somebody wants it. Who's that somebody is? I don't know. But somebody wants the culture and traditions of this job dead. And we can't allow it. We can't allow it. And that's how we take care of one another.
Facts. Okay. Top floor tactics. How did that come about? What sparked that for you to start that?
You know, so everyone, as much as they don't want to admit it, you come to a slump in your career at some point. And now slumps sometimes can be good. As long as you're proactive at work and things are going good at work and you're going to fires, you can still fall into a slump of what this job is about. I hit that slump and it was probably around 2016, 17. Not that I was like upset or pissed off. I was having a time of my life going to fires in a great company with with the greatest guys in the world. But I started to think about what's next in life. Maybe get a sailboat, maybe get more into surfing, spend some more time with the ocean, maybe buy a house in the mountains. Like I started to think, what's next, right? And I struggled with that because I was like, I can't believe I never thought about life outside the firehouse because that's all I ever knew as a young kid. That's all I ever wanted. And when I started to realize like maybe there's more to life, which there is more to life, but I wasn't ready to have those thoughts. I wasn't ready to let it go. So one night I'm in my garage and doing some work and having a beer and on my phone and I'm just scrolling and I didn't follow any social media as far as fire service stuff. It was nothing to do with the fire service. So I'm on YouTube and I was watching something else. I forget what it was. And pops up is the old Rescue 3 videos from 1991, 4th of July. It's a classic, classic video. And it was remastered to put on YouTube. And I was watching that. I was like, wow, man, that's pretty cool. I remember watching this as a kid. I was so into it. It's all I ever wanted to do, ever wanted to be. That video ends. Next one pops up and it's National Fire Radio with my dear friend Jeremy. And I'm like, look at this guy. What the hell is this? You know, so I'm laughing at it, to be honest with you. I'm straight up laughing at it. But the more I listened to it, the more I listened to it, and he had a couple episodes at that point. It was his very beginning for him as well. And I said, wow, like there's a whole subculture of society within the society that I love. Like, this is crazy. And being with the New York City Fire Department is that we're so big that we're so absorbed in our own world, we don't realize there's a world outside of it. And that's what I realized very quickly when I started to realize, wow, there's a life outside this job. Not that I was looking for it, but it kind of gave me a rebirth to look at things. So I said, all right, let me see what's going on. Then I go into Instagram and I put in firefighting, right? Whatever it is. And a couple of things popped up and I was training things here and there. And I was like, wow, like this is pretty cool. So that said, I've had notebooks that I've been writing and writing and writing since I was a probie. In the FDNY, we have a notebook that you get when you're a probie. It's called a probie manual, and you keep it. It's like a journal. And every tour you write on it, the officer signs it, the chief checks it, he signs it. And it just keeps you into the books as a young fireman. I kept all mine and I continued mine throughout my entire career. Now, was it sitting down every night writing in it? No, but every fire I went to, every mistake I made, I wrote them down. And why? I don't know. I love writing. I've always wanted to be a writer. Never wanted to write anything about the fire service, but it kind of happened that I had all these journals. So I took about seven or eight of those pages, made them into short little posts, made them, put them in drafts. I blocked everyone I knew, so no one knew I was doing this, because you know how the fireman can be. And I put them out 6 days in a row. First one, second one, third one. And this is when Instagram was just getting up and running. So it kind of was different kinds of exposure. It took off right off the bat. Like people started seeing it, boom, boom, boom. And as it grew, but it's been a marathon. It's been a long game for sure. But that's how it started, was just realizing that I was in a slump. There's a culture that I found with something else I loved that kind of rebirthed me into it. I loved writing, so I put some writing into Instagram, and then I just started posting it. And then I networked throughout that, and that ultimately brought me into speaking and writing and a whole world I'm living today. But it just came from journals that I kept years ago, and then finding another way to love the job in a different way that I was looking for.
And I'm sure you never imagined it would have taken off how it has today.
No, this is, see, that's the thing. Like, I didn't want any of this. I just wanted to put a couple posts out. That was my alias, just for, I was hiding behind it. It was funny. I'd be working in firehouses and people looking at it, because I didn't put my name or face to it at this point. And I would see them reading it, and I was like, wow, that's wild. Like, I posted that this morning, and now the guys are drilling on it, and I'm remaining silent at the kitchen table, because I'm like, that was the drill I just put out this morning. Now these guys are drilling on it. That's when I realized there was a need for something. Especially something internally within my job. Like you said, that looking outside the job for more training, that's not a real thing in the FDNY. But this was a way to get inside perspective from an outside source. So people were drawn to it, I guess you would say. But that's kind of how it blew up. And no, this is the last thing I ever wanted. I still don't want it, but it's been very good to me. I've met the best friends of my life. Like, who would think at someone who's almost 50 years old, I'm meeting best friends now in my life, that'd be lifetime friends that I wish I met years ago, you know?
Our social media. I
It's
mean,
insane.
it's
Yeah.
good or bad. I mean, there's good sides, there's definitely bad sides, but you can't deny how you being in New York City, you have friends all over the on the other side of the country, just the power of social media.
Yeah. I mean, I'll show up to a conference or a class somewhere, and there's a guy from Houston. I go over, and it's not just a, hey, what's up, brother? It's a hug. It's an embrace. How are you doing, brother? Right? I'll go to Atlanta. It's a hug. It's an embrace. It's real friendships that have been made through social media, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. My last question, I always like to guess. I always like to ask the guests, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up?
That's a question that I was thinking about driving home from work last night, which is so funny you asked that. And I didn't have an answer for myself, so maybe I could find an answer for you. But I was thinking about the future. I was just thinking about the future of what I want out of my career. And I can't see the finish line. And that's a good thing and a bad thing, maybe. I mean, I'm going on 24 years now, and I don't have a plan. And is it a good thing or a bad thing? I think that it's a good thing right now for me. I don't want a plan. I love going to work. I love the guys I go to work with. So where I see myself in the future is hopefully still crawling down some hallways with brothers that I love, I truly love, and hopefully still passing on the good word, the traditions and loyalty of this job.
Okay. I mean, I get it. You don't, that's the thing. Like you don't think you'll get there, but in an instant, you said what, over 20 years, right? Just like that. You never would have thought, and already boom, 20 years. So what, how much time do you have to have, or does it matter before you can, do your paperwork for retirement?
You can get out of 20 years, so I'm on my
Okay.
time, quote unquote. But you know, we just had my deputy chief just retired yesterday. It was the last tour of 35 years, which is why I was reflecting on my drive home. It's like, wow, man, 35 years coming to work, you know, and it's like, what do you do now, right? So you really have to be ready for that step. And I want it to be on my terms. A lot of guys get put off this job not on their own terms, and it's a heartbreak. And you never, I don't think you ever fully recover from it. But I'm not sure that I could ever find the terms to do that. I guess you'll know when the time is right. They say when you go on vacation and then you don't want to go back to work, then it's time to think about retirement. I haven't had that yet, so I'll wait for that day, you know?
Okay. No, understood. Understood. I thoroughly enjoyed. I mean, I have listened to you talk at conferences, but you have. There's no denying. There's no way anybody can say that guy's not into it. The way you eloquently speak it the heart, the love of the job shows 100% from you. And I just have to say thank you for spending time out of your day to do this. Truly means a lot from one New Yorker to another. Like, seriously, Mickey, thank you very much.
No, Danny, thank you for having me. And honestly, the love and passion just comes from working with the greatest guys. And I think that a lot of my passion is those guys bleeding through me. And so I really owe my love of this job for having the ability and having the honor and being so blessed to be able to be a part of the best fire department in the world and work with the greatest firemen I've ever thought I could ever imagine working with. So I'm glad you see that in me, because it's not only me, it's the job, it's the love. It's the FDNY.
No, there's no denying it. No denying it. You know, firemen can smell bullshit, but to me, there's nobody out there that can say that guy wasn't into it. Not at all.
I appreciate that, Danny. Thank you.
Yes, sir. If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.